Welcome to Limitless, the Blind Beginnings podcast where we discuss tips, tricks, and current topics related to all things in the blind and partially sighted community. Now, it is my pleasure to introduce the founder of Blind Beginnings and your host, Sean Marcellet, and whatever co-host is on this week. Now, here's your host, Sean.
Welcome back to Limitless, the Blind Beginnings podcast. I'm your host, Sean Marcellet, and today we have a topic that is really awesome. We're going to be talking about the difference between congenital blindness and adventitious blindness, and we'll explain that in a minute, what that means. But first, I want to introduce Randy, who is one of the co-hosts today. And Randy, this was your topic, and you brought it forward, so tell me why.
Hey, Sean. Hey, everyone. So I thought of this because there's a whole scale to, you know, the visually impaired community, you know, different levels of blindness, legal blindness. Some people have light perception, some people don't. You know, it's this huge varying scale. And, you know, some of us have conditions that were present from birth, or in my case, hereditary, carried down from my mom's family. Other people, it might have been, you know, if you lost your vision later in life, it's probably not a, you know, maybe it's not a condition you already had. Maybe it was an accident. Maybe something else happened. Maybe it was a gene that you didn't know you had that, you know, popped up later. So I thought it was really interesting because it's completely different how you go through life and how you adapt if you have had it most or all of your life, or had something happen suddenly.
Yes. And I totally agree. And I've started to say to people that I almost feel like it's a different disability, because there's just a lot of differences. I mean, of course, there's some similarities too. And we're going to get into all of this in this conversation. But for me, I work with a lot of parents of kids that are blind. And it's really almost impossible as a parent who is sighted. I'm not speaking of myself, I'm just saying because I'm not sighted. But for parents who are sighted, when they find out that their child's blind, they're looking at blindness through a sighted lens. They're looking at and probably thinking about, you know, if I woke up tomorrow and was blind, they see all the loss there. It's impossible not to. But for that child who's born blind, they don't even know that they're different until they learn that they're different. And if nobody ever told us that we were different, would we even feel different? So it's just such an interesting, it's just such a different, such an interesting conversation. And I'm so excited to get into this. So I want to introduce the rest of us that are here today. So we have Nika. Hi, Nika. Hi. And Jill.
Hey.
Hi, Jill and Brody. Welcome, hey. Brody. And I'm going to get, we're each going to introduce ourselves and our eye conditions and how and when we got them. So, Randy, do you want to go first?
Sure, I don't mind. Well, I was born with my condition. It's called Stickler syndrome, or if you want to get fancy, hereditary degenerative arthro-ophthalmopathy. Basically, it means it can affect a lot of different things in my body, including my joint tissues and stuff like that. But in my family, because I am in the position that I have inherited it from my mom, who inherited it from her dad. So unlike a lot of people in the blind community, where they might be the only members of their family with any vision loss or any difference of vision, you expected it pretty much. When my parents started having kids, they did some genetic counseling and were pretty much told it's about a 50-50 shot on each child, whether they'll get the gene or not. And I did get the gene. My older brother did not. So we really kind of proved the ratio there. Mm-hmm. And my vision has been fairly stable my whole life. I've been officially diagnosed and been wearing glasses since I was 2 years old. There was kind of a 2-year period where the doctors were like, oh no, her vision's fine. And then looked again and, oh no, wait, it's really bad.
Right.
So it was kind of funny, but I in a sense, I'm almost one of the luckiest ones because I have a direct family connection, a direct family role model in my case, she's a wonderful advocate and has taught me many, you know, strategies and self-advocacy skills and, you know, even just daily life skills, you know, either specifically taught or through observation, that a lot of other people won't have all that because they come from a fully sighted family.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So you are congenitally visually impaired.
Yeah, maybe we should define
mm-hmm.
congenital and adventitious right now.
Sure. Do you want to do that?
Sure. So I'm not going to quote the dictionary in this case, but basically congenital means something that's present from birth, you know, so whether that's congenital blindness, deafness, another kind of condition, whereas adventitious means something that was caused by an outside factor. So usually that means you are losing your vision later in life due to a different factor. You know, it can still be a genetic thing, but it hasn't been there from the time you were born.
Perfect. Okay, so Nika, why don't you introduce yourself and your vision?
Yeah, so I am also congenitally blind. I was born with Peter's anomaly, which basically means that the front part of my eyes aren't formed properly. And I'm 19 years old right now, and my vision has been pretty stable. As far as I can remember, it's been the same ever since I was, the earliest memories I have were from when I was 2. So for the past 17 years, it's been the same. And basically, most of my usable vision is in my left eye, and I can see light, shapes, and colors. I can see kind of basic shapes of what objects are, but I can't see small details.
Awesome. Now, Jill and I are kind of hybrids. Jill, why don't you go next? I'm saying that. Well, we'll explain. It'll make sense in a moment. Why don't you explain?
I love the term.
Me too.
Yeah, right? So I'm adventitiously blind. But mine wasn't really from an accident, like a car accident or anything, for example. Mine was actually due to being 3 months premature. So my eye condition is called retinopathy of prematurity, which affects your retina. So there's a very high risk of retinal detachment. So when I was born, they didn't catch my eye condition until a couple of hours later when my retina had detached in the left eye. So I've been fully blind in my left eye my entire life. And then I was low vision in the right. So the only, I guess, accommodations I needed were large print and like better, brighter lighting in classrooms, but I didn't need a cane or like any accessible technology. I didn't need anything like that. But when I was 15, the condition kind of got worse, I guess. And my retina had detached in the right eye, and they had tried multiple reattachment surgeries, which, you know, that part was successful, but my eye went through so much trauma that the optic nerve then got damaged, so there's nothing they can really do now. So I'm almost 24, so it's been almost 10 years, actually, which is kind of crazy to think about. So it's been about 10 years since I've been fully blind in both eyes, and all I see now is what are called phantom lights. So they're basically just fake lights that, you know, have no purpose. They're just kind of oddly mm-hmm. there. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. So I feel like congenitally visually impaired, but adventitiously blind, perhaps, because you were visually impaired like at birth.
Yeah.
Because
but it wasn't like a genetic.
Yes.
Like most visually impaired people that I know of, their eye conditions are genetic.
Right.
As where mine was just, I was born way too early, basically.
Yeah.
So
It doesn't necessarily have to be like a gene expressed from birth. It's just that your vision has been impaired since birth. So
right.
Yes.
I think, yeah. Sean's right.
And genetics also doesn't necessarily mean a gene is passed on. It can also mean a mutation or kind of a mistake mm-hmm. when your DNA right. was being copied.
Yeah.
Like mine wasn't passed on by a gene. Mine was because I'm missing one of my chromosomes.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So mine was just a situational birth issue, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm a hybrid because I wasn't diagnosed until I was 5, but I'm assuming that I was always visually impaired, but no one can really say for certain. So when I was 14 months old, I got my first pair of glasses. I had a lazy eye. Like, there was stuff going on, but they didn't notice that I had retinitis pigmentosa until I was 5. And then gradually throughout my whole life, my vision has deteriorated. So I have vision loss, but I didn't start with a full 20/20 vision anyways. So I was all, you know, visually impaired from birth. So I'm somewhere in between. Now, Brody, you are the true different one today. Tell us about you.
Yes. Yeah. So my eye condition is called Leber's hereditary optic neuropathy, and I have the mutation 11778. And there's two other mutations, which I can't remember at the moment. But yeah, so it's a hereditary eye condition. And then there's a plus part with a muscular dystrophy and MS-like symptoms and some other body issues too, with if you have the plus part, if you have that gene mutation. So it was 2012. I started losing my central vision. I was 25 years old. just turned, about a couple months before that, November, and then about January or so, just, after it, started, it's the right eye was kind of going all foggy and stuff. So I had about 25 years of, perfect vision, didn't wear glasses or anything like that, but I did have this eye condition, present in my system. And then, something triggered it. I don't know if it was stress or what at the time. I was working as an electrician at the time in construction. And so I thought something, I wasn't wearing goggles one day or whatever it was at work. So, I thought I, injured my eye or something like that. So that was my right eye. I was starting to see these little, floater kind of gray things, and they'd kind of disappear, and it's kind of weird, and close my right eye and I could still see clear in my left eye. And then it was about, I think about six months after, going through different appointments and stuff like that, trying to figure it out. But also, so it's in the family. So my aunt, I think it was about 10 years before that. So I think I was 14 or 15, and she was diagnosed with Leber's, the same mutation, 11778. And she lived in Saskatoon, Saskatchewan. And so we kind of knew about the blindness thing at that part, but we didn't know exactly, there wasn't any genetic counseling that she didn't tell any of us that we, so we can present the issue and stuff, later on in life, there might be a possibility. So if it's about 6 months after, started losing the central vision in the left eye now, and it'll, more these gray kind of, black kind of fuzzy kind of spots. And then they turned into, those like, phantom lights, we call them. And, it's just like, just nonsense.
Brody and I bonded over phantom lights.
we had a kind of connection. Yeah. Yeah. So, it was kind of weird because I didn't know that. I thought I was kind of going crazy or something because she's, flashing things. And, I thought it was something else or whatever it was. But yeah, it was, these with my eyes closed. So it's a little bit of an annoyance that sometimes we kind of look past it. Right. So.
Okay. Wow. Cool. Yeah. So you were fully sighted until you were 25, and then, and then within a matter of months, it sounds like you lost a good chunk of your vision.
That's right. Yeah.
So in the blindness world, a lot of people use the term vision loss. And I'm wondering for all of us, whether we identify with that. Do we consider ourselves to have vision loss?
I would definitely say yes. Just because, like, even though I was fully blind in my left eye my entire life, I have very, very good vision in my, well, it was still legally blind. It was like 20 over 200. So like it was considered legally blind still, but it was a very useful amount of vision. Like like I said before, I didn't need a cane. I had to read large print, and I could like see a computer screen without accessible technology and everything. Mm-hmm. So I didn't need really any like accommodations or adaptations for anything. Right. And I lost my sight within, it was about 6 months. So going from that like very high, very useful amount of sight to literally nothing. Mm-hmm. And like, it was not a very gradual shift, right? Like it was pretty quick.
Yeah.
So it was definitely a huge, huge loss of vision. So I definitely, I guess I would say identify with vision loss, like the term. So
right.
Well, I'm a little torn on this question because my vision has been pretty much stable my whole life. It's, you know, if you compare it to what we all call average or normal vision, I certainly don't have that. I am in this strange kind of area where I'm not considered legally blind because they measure that with your best corrected vision. So in my case, my glasses bring me up enough to be kind of just over that threshold by a little bit. But I'm, you know, compared to 90% of the sighted world or more, I have much less vision than that, but I haven't technically lost any since I've had it. Right. But my condition is degenerative. Technically at any moment, my retina could snap and I could go blind then. It's not entirely likely. And it, you know, but it is a possibility and it is reasonably expected that it will go downhill, you know, as I get older. I've also been told by a friend of mine who used to work as an ophthalmic technician in the ophthalmologist's office that even if you have no other, you know, vision problems, you kind of, every person's eye kind of starts going downhill after about 35.
Right.
So, you know, I have a lot of extra vision problems on that. And, you know, my condition affects the retinas specifically in our family. They're very thin, or we have very myopic eyes, which means they're kind of shaped like a football on the back. A normal eye is supposed to be a round globe, and the back of mine is, you know, kind of like a cone. So that stretches an already thin retina extra. So I'm, like Jill, very prone, or, you know, at very high risk of retinal detachment, although I have never personally had one, luckily. But yeah, so I'm a little bit torn on the current, my current use of the terms vision loss.
Okay. Nika, what about you?
So for me, I actually really don't identify with the term vision loss, just because for me, the definition of kind of losing something means I would have had to have it to begin with. And because my condition was genetic, I was kind of just made visually impaired. It's in my genetics, kind of. And so that's why I never identified with it. Also, my doctors have said they expect my eye condition and my kind of, you know, visual field and acuity to stay the same, and they don't expect it to get worse in the coming years.
Right. And Brody, I'm pretty sure I know your answer.
Yes, I definitely, I definitely go to the vision loss for sure.
Yeah.
Just having the, not really perfect sight, but yeah, I definitely could, you know, I didn't have to use any accessible technology and I can read and write, but I didn't read very well, but definitely for sure could relate to that vision loss with essential vision for sure.
Yeah, being a hybrid myself, I
love it so much.
I'm not really sure. I have had vision loss. It's just been so gradual. It's not something, it wasn't like a dramatic, one day I could see and one day I couldn't. It was like, I could see a little and then I could see a little less and a little less and a little less. And so I don't know. It's not the term I tend to use. I tend to say blind or partially sighted. I refer to myself as blind. But yeah, it is kind of a global vision loss community. But yet those of us who were born, who are congenitally blind or partially sighted, don't have vision loss. So it's just an interesting debate.
Yeah.
So leading from that, for Nika, Randy, and my guess me, well, not quite me. No, I don't fit here either. See, I don't fit anywhere. So for Nika and Randy, do you mourn the loss? Do you feel a sense of loss around your vision? Like, is it something you mourn for?
I think I do. And I've actually gotten this question a lot, and people kind of ask, like, how do you miss something you don't have? And what I compare it to in a way is kind of like a parent or a child who doesn't have like parents, and they kind of sometimes wish like for what could have been. I don't really think like that anymore so much. I kind of was in a worse headspace when I was younger, but now that I've gotten more involved, I don't really, you know, think kind of in that self-deprecating way. But I definitely think when I was younger, I did kind of mourn my vision, my lack of vision loss, I should say.
Right. And how about you, Randy?
I'm kind of similar to Nika in the sense of, I mean, I haven't technically lost anything, but, you know, I do kind of, on different occasions, wish for what could have been, I guess. It's usually instances where I'm confronted with, you know, an example of a sighted friend I'm with going, oh, yes, I see that bus number or that sign or what have you. And I'm like, there's a bus? They can read the words on the display on the front of the bus, and I'm not even sure there's a bus yet, mm-hmm. you know, or, you know, can read a sign across the street, can read a, you know, note written on the, in a movie that they zoom in on, stuff like that, where I'm just kind of like, you know, when I'm confronted with how little vision I have by comparison, it's kind of like, gosh dang it, you know. And like Nika said, it kind of goes through different periods of, you know, when you're in a worse headspace, you're going to be more upset about not having that. But most of the time, I don't really think about it. But there's definitely times where I'm still, you know, get extra frustrated with my vision or get extra frustrated with my eyes and how, you know, why can't I see that? Or, you know, they're starting to, you know, if I'm doing a lot of paperwork or something at work and they start kind of unfocusing, it's just like, come on, why can't you work for me here?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's funny because it's not. It's not seeing that I miss, I guess, if I could even say miss. It's sometimes there's just things you can't do, like getting stuck, you know, like, I don't know, something, I want to read a book and it's not available on Audible. And so I can't read it because it's not in a format. But if it was in a format, I wouldn't even care that I can't see. So for me, it's not really about not being able to see. I've never seen the stars, so I don't miss seeing the stars. I guess in some ways I'm curious about maybe what they look like, but I, you know, the fact that I can't really watch a sunset doesn't really bother me because that's not function, like that doesn't help me do what I need to do. But yeah, if everyone's talking about a book and I can't read it, then I feel like, ugh. Left out or something, but it's not really related to vision. What about you, Jill?
So because like my vision was never like perfect to begin with. So I grew up as like a low vision kid in a family of sighted people. Right. So when like my siblings were able to drive, I always knew that I couldn't drive. I would drive in fields because I'm from a small town and that's what we do. But, like, I could never drive on a road. So that was something, like, I wished for because, again, growing up in a small town, transit is awful. And, like, that's a big kind of rite of passage is when you're 16, you get your driver's license, right? So certain situations like that where, like, there were certain visual things I knew I couldn't do because I was low vision and it was, like, there were just certain things, like, driving I couldn't do. Mm-hmm. So those situations, like especially driving, was one thing that that's where like I wish I could see so I could get my driver's license. But like kind of what you mentioned with the stars, Sean, like being low vision, then I, even though I could see really well, I was very night blind. And I didn't know that was a thing back then because mm-hmm. I was the only one in my town with like a visual impairment that I knew of at the time. So like I understood the concept of stars and I knew like I understood it, but they were too far away so I could never see them. Mm-hmm. But I could still see like the moon and like I could still see like a sunset and like stuff like that, right? So there are certain aspects where being low vision, there are certain things I wish I could have had better sight to do. Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of an interesting situation because like I know what so many things look like from being able to see for the majority of my life so far. But there's always like certain little things that like, oh, this would be so much better if I could see. Or like even, for example, if it was a sunny day, going, being outside and coming indoors, it took my eyes a really long time to adjust. So it's like really, really dark when I go inside. Like, and if we went inside at school, my friends would be halfway down the hallway before my eyes would adjust so I could catch up with them. So there's like little things like that were annoying. Or I had pretty bad depth perception. So I had really hard time with stairs at times because I couldn't see the different steps. I couldn't tell them apart. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, I fall upstairs, not downstairs, ironically. So I always tripped up the stairs, which was probably better. So like they would put like reflective like tape on the edge of the stairs sometimes. But so like, there were certain things like that where if I could have just seen a little bit better, I wouldn't have been as clumsy. Or like there are certain things that I would be able to do with my friends and siblings better. So yeah, I guess that's kind of my interesting perspective on that one.
I want to go back to driving because I feel like that's a big thing. So Brody, tell us about having to give up driving.
Having to give up driving. Well, before I lost my central vision, most of my vision to, you know, be able to see properly to drive. I got my license a little bit later. I got it when I was 18, not about 16, 17, a little later in my friends and in life. And then I had it for a couple of years and then I got my license taken away. So I didn't have too many years of driving privilege. It wasn't really a shock to it. When I started losing my central vision and stuff due to LHON, so when I was 25, so it was a number of years after, so it definitely did, put a negative situation in some things, you know, having my independence, or it was definitely an eye opener because I was in the process of, you know, getting it back. And then this kind of came up around the corner. So It was kind of challenging because then, you know, I thought, you know, what's going to come next kind of thing. And then with, you know, going to a different eye specialist and then your ophthalmologist saying that, you know, you're not going to, you know, go totally blind, but you are going to, you know, not have, you know, good enough vision to be driving or anything or having to be even going back to the construction shed or anything like that. Because I was, you know, a hands-on guy. So so it was just kind of a big wake-up call.
I've heard though giving up a license is really hard for people who lose their vision, and
yes,
it's not something I can relate to. By the time I was 12, I understood I would never drive, and I think there was a part of me that maybe was even a tiny bit, like I was a little bit bummed that people would be talking about what kind of car they were going to get when they turned 16, like I don't know who was buying them that car, but but we talked about it and I couldn't be part of that conversation, but there was a part of me that knew I could not see well enough to drive and was kind of relieved that I didn't have to fake my way through driving because I felt like I'd been faking my way through life, trying, you know, pretending to see when I couldn't. And I think I was kind of like, how am I going to pretend I can see well enough to drive? That's just not safe.
I'm probably the only other one here besides Brody who has driven on legally driven on roads, let's say.
The legally part.
Yeah. I mean,
small town.
Hasn't legally done it, but you never know. But yeah, because I was, as I said, I was always visually impaired, but not technically legally blind. So there was quite a while where, you know, my parents and I, and even myself, we were kind of all setting me up in the mental area, you know, when that time came and I couldn't get a license to not be devastated by it. You know, so there was a lot of years of that basically. And I kind of never expected to get it, but also there was a bit of me that was like, well, if the vision doesn't change, you know, so time came, I was 16. I went, did the book, I read, you know, read everything, did the vision test. And, you know, I probably, you know, in hindsight, because hindsight's 2020 and that's the only 2020 I'll ever have. I probably never should have had my license. I probably, I didn't cheat or anything, but I think I guessed too well. As a lot of you will probably relate to, if you have a lot of years of not quite seeing things, your brain kind of fills in the blanks over time. You know, the shape of the word washroom is visible long before I can read the individual letters. You know, yes. There's only some words yeah. shaped like that with that combination of ups and downs and things. So I think I kind of guessed too well after that many years of practice. And, you know, threes, eights, and sixes were a little iffy. And that's a little bit iffy if you're looking at a speed limit sign. Is it a 30 or is it an 80? You know, that being said, I'm also from a very small town. Transit is, yeah, basically almost non-existent or not particularly useful unless you're in the elderly category. And you kind of have to drive everywhere, but my entire town's speed limit is a 30-kilometer zone, and there's no such thing as rush hour, basically. So I kind of got away with it for a couple of years. I got my N, drove my last year of high school to and from school and work and stuff like that. When I moved into the Lower Mainland, into the city, I obviously wasn't going to, you know, deal with the financials of having a car at that point. And then as time progressed, my license came up to expire. I'm, you know, over time, kind of thinking of myself less and less, you know, like, I'm not using this license. I really probably should never have driven. I can't see that street sign from across the street. I really probably shouldn't be in a car. Mm-hmm. You know, so I handed my license in and exchanged it for an ID because it was going to expire anyways. There's no point in renewing it. And the odd occasion where I do use a white cane or bring a cane with me somewhere, you know, if, for example, if I went into a bank with a cane and then produced a driver's license as my form of ID, might be a little bit of an interesting explanation required.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah. So, you know, I guess I kind of got my...
took away your own driver's license.
Yeah. I relinquished it. Yes. So it I didn't lose it, or, you know, I didn't have, you know, it wasn't a situation where, you know, the vision strictly dictated it had to go, but I probably never should have really gotten it. If I'd taken a test in a city with more traffic, I probably wouldn't have passed, you know. I would still feel confident now driving down, yeah, deserted back roads or what have you, but not busy cities with quick reflexes and signs flying past and too many people.
What about you, Nika? How do you feel about not driving?
So I'm actually really, really optimistic about not driving, just because, for one, I'm kind of into the whole eco-friendly thing. And I thought, oh, cool, that's an excuse for me to, like, create fewer emissions. And also, I don't have to worry about the finances, because apparently it's a lot. Like, you need to pay for gas and insurance and then the actual car. So, you know,
repairs.
Yeah, I can have, like, you know, more money, spend it on useful, important things like makeup.
I knew you were gonna say that. But I love that, and you're totally right, and I kind of view it that way too, until you marry someone who has a vehicle and then you have to pay for it even though you can't drive it.
Well, it was funny because so I have a twin sister, so like obviously we turned 16 same time, and she got her license and I didn't, and somehow I became okay with that because I knew that I'd always be in the shotgun seat in her car because that was my spot. Because, like, we always would drive to and from school and, like, around town and stuff. So that became, like, my designated spot, no matter who was in the car with us or not. Aside from, like, our parents and grandparents. But, like, that's a respectful thing. But, like, with there's something about where if you can put your name, if you're a visually impaired person, you can put your name on their vehicle. Mm-hmm. And there's, like, something to do with taxes or something. So we actually ended up doing that with her car. We put my name on it as well, because for all of high school, like, well, I guess grade 11 and grade 12, she, like, we always drive together to school and home and everything like that, right? So it was kind of my way of, like, I didn't really have my own car, but it was like, I have my name on a car, this is so cool. But I'm also helping her out because she's driving me everywhere.
Yeah,
so
that's cool.
It's kind of an interesting situation, but yeah,
there is a sort of disability discount because I did drive for that couple of years. The car was in my mom's name, and she is just about totally blind now. She had a bit more vision back then, but because it was in her name, there was an insurance discount on it. Mm-hmm. And then because I was her primary driver, you know, it's kind of like, you know, putting me as her official chauffeur.
Yeah, exactly.
So this is an interesting question, I think, but what perceptions of blindness did you have before you lost your vision, or for those of us who didn't or sort of did lose vision, maybe before you understood your visual impairment? So
growing up in a small town, there were a couple other, like, younger, like visually impaired people. One was around my age. The other one was in their, I think, 30s or 40s. But everyone, like my perception of blindness or some kind of visual impairment was like senior.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because like I was always the only like visually impaired person anywhere that I knew of. Because I didn't know the other ones closer to my age. So I guess my perception of like visual impairment, it's kind of just like as you get older and you like become like a senior, then you tend to have vision issues.
Right.
But it's obviously not accurate. That's not accurate. But that was a lot more when I was younger, definitely. But even like into my like teens, I didn't know anyone who was blind. So my only kind of perception was my own experience.
What about you, Brody?
My perception was, I thought it was all or nothing. Like I knew there was, some differences to it with different levels, obviously with different eye conditions, but I didn't know the very, you know, the broad spectrum of it, whereas, you know, there's central to, you know, tunnel vision to, you know, a number of things. Right. And I, like, 'cause my aunt, when she was visually impaired or blind, you know, she would mention the same things that I'm seeing now. And, you know, I was like, oh, you know, okay, that, you know, that's kind of cool. Or, you know, how can we help? Or, you know, what can you, like, you know, all these, you know, curious questions and stuff. Right. So I was the only person in my family. And then, I didn't have any friends or anything, or anyone that I knew close to me that had, a visual impairment. I didn't, see anyone, you know, in high school or even, in my earlier years in school too. So it was, you know, I was always curious when I seen, you know, when I was younger, you know, seeing someone walk with their white cane or now using a white cane now, I think, you know, it's pretty cool when I get the chance to, you know, when there's a little guy or girl, you know, curious and wants to get the parent to ask me, you know, how do you use that? And he explained, you know, I had one time at Costco and the kid was so curious about how I could use the white cane and stuff. And so I, you know, kind of told him, you know, this is how I see things with my mind and stuff and with touch. And yeah, he thought it was pretty cool that I told him that. But, you know, yeah, I didn't, you know too much. But then being involved at the various organizations and on the sports teams and stuff now, and, you know, there's so many different vision types and levels and stuff. And some of us do relate with, you know, same things. And I think it's just remarkable. So, yeah.
Randy, you grew up with a mom who was blind, so I feel like your perception of blindness is maybe the most accurate.
I don't know. It might be deceiving, though, because my mom's had her vision problem her whole life. Her best vision has always been worse than mine. She had multiple retinal detachments starting from age 11 on through her life. She's been totally blind in the one eye for at least my lifetime, I'm pretty sure. And so, you know, growing up, and maybe you can relate to the parent side of this, Sean, with your son, but when you have a parent who has a visual impairment or blindness, maybe you don't realize for quite as a long time how bad their vision is. I don't think I realized like entirely until I was, you know, teenage adult almost, of like, huh, looking back, maybe, you know, kind of like how, you know, I was saying earlier, like, you know, I could guess the word washroom from the shape before I could see the letters. She's probably kind of been doing a lot of that too. Like she, in my case, my mom was a stay-at-home mom. My dad was out working. She had a pension from the government job. She used to work before that and everything. So she was, you know, always home and cleaning and cooking dinner and stuff like that. And, you know, chopping things and, you know, didn't use a cane until the more like the last like 5-10 years when I've already been out of the house, you know, or I was, you know, almost a fully grown teenager. So as a kid, I don't think I really clued in quite as much as you would expect, but I never had, I guess, perceptions of blind people in a way, like they were almost non-existent, the perceptions, not the people, because, you know, I have my mom as an example.
Yeah,
exactly. There was nothing different. And because she was actually one of the founding members of the White Cane Club chapter up in Hunter Mile. And so I was around most of my life, numerous people with visual impairments, but most of them were more so due to age vision loss than genetic anything. Mm-hmm. So there was I think four of us that I'm aware of who were like under 30 in 100 Mile, and none of us were close enough in age to actually know each other in school, or we came from different elementary schools and didn't meet really in the high schools and everything. So, you know, I had a few more people in town than Jill did in hers, but not really, no friends, you know, we didn't really know each other for the most part. But it meant I, you know, came along to luncheons and raffles and Christmas parties and things. So I knew a couple of fully blind people with their canes, and then a bunch of different people in the range of partially sighted, including my mom and all of that. So I don't know. Yeah, it was just, there weren't really any perceptions. And then when I got older and came down to summer camp and Blind Beginnings and met people actually my own age, there was just a lot of like, hey, you know, this is great. And I just kind of fell into it, you know, of I'd never sighted guided anyone before. And I just kind of, somebody grabbed my elbow and just kind of happened and we went along. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of an interesting position to be in. Like I say, I consider it relatively lucky, because any situation I've gone through or I'm going to go through with my vision, my mom probably already has.
Yeah, that's cool. But I love that it was just normal. Like blindness and visual impairment was so normal to you that it wasn't even a thing to perceive, which I hope is the case for my son too. Like he's just growing up surrounded by it, by me and friends of mine that are blind. And yeah, it's just normal.
Yeah. Cool. I mean, I'm sure there was times, and you probably experienced too, where as a kid, we went, you know, said something of like, you know, what's this? Or, you know, look at this. And it's like, the parent can't see that from there, and maybe they tell you, maybe they pretend they can, maybe they come closer, I don't know. But you know, kind of,
yeah
I'm sure it, especially in the younger years too. Mm-hmm. You know, once you're, you know, late elementary, early middle, high school, you kind of get more of a, you know, a concept of people around you, I guess, you know. Mm-hmm. As opposed to just being like, oh, everyone's fine, everyone's perfect, you know, you can all see and hear and do all the same things.
Right. What about you, Nika? Did you have any perceptions of blindness?
Okay, my perception is weird, and feel free to make fun of me for it, but because I didn't really start getting involved with things until I was 9, I think I maybe went to one program or something when I was 5, but I don't really remember it. So I didn't actually meet many people who were partially sighted or blind until I was 9 and went to summer camp and started Blind Beginnings. And oh God, this is so embarrassing, but all of the people I knew who were blind or partially sighted were all women and identified as female. So I, for the longest time until I was 9, thought that blindness was like a female only condition or something.
That's great. Why?
Why does it affect men? That's so funny. And then I got to camp and I'm like, you're a boy.
Oh, Nika.
That's pretty interesting, actually, Nika, because I've kind of wondered if there might actually be a grain of truth in like the ratio of, you know, vision or, you know, partially sighted and blindness in people who identify as each gender. But well, at least in my family, that
men are more likely to be blind than women, interestingly.
I've heard the opposite. I've heard there's more blind females, but I think it's because the majority of blind people are seniors and women live longer than men.
Oh, okay.
So,
because at least in my family, in my family, it's kind of a 50-50, because it was my grandpa, my uncle, my mom, and me. But the only other person I've met who hasn't related to me who has the same eye condition, it was her mom, her aunt, her sister, and her niece.
Wow. And with mine, I only know 5 people actually with the same eye condition. Or is it 4? Might only be 4. But out of that 4 or 5 people, only one of them is like a man.
Oh,
the rest of them are female, so I find that interesting as well.
And maybe my conspiracy is through.
Well, on this podcast, there's 4 females and only 1 male. So, you know, I don't know. There could be something to this. So I just wanted to share my perception of blindness, because I didn't really know or understand that I was visually impaired until I was 12. And
when I found out, I don't think I had ever met anybody who was blind. There definitely wasn't anybody in my family. Oh, my great grandmother had glaucoma, but she was my great grandmother. Like, I just assumed it was because she was older that, you know, I think she went blind later on in life. I'm pretty sure. So I thought the blind people didn't work. I don't know, like just probably would, I'd probably have to like be taken care of for the rest of my life. That was my perception and I guess my fear also. So not a very positive perception of blindness, definitely. So when I educate people about congenital versus adventitious blindness, I usually say that kids who are born blind don't generally mourn the loss of their vision because they didn't have it to lose in the first place. In at least not in the same way that someone who loses vision later on in life would, because it's a huge loss for somebody who's an adult who's giving up so many things that they're used to doing. But on the flip side, learning new concepts and skills is much more challenging when you can't see, because so much of what we typically learn as, you know, sighted people, what sighted people typically learn, what sighted children typically learn, they learn just by observing. So they say as much as 85% of what kids typically learn, they learn just through observation, through vision. And when you're blind, you don't learn things accidentally. So I was just curious if you guys can think of something that you've learned as an adult that, you know, maybe was surprising to your peers or something that you feel like most people knew, but you had to be taught.
So I think for me, one of the things is kind of the debit card, credit card, card insert machine thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just because I think, you know, most people kind of, it's obvious, like you read the screen, you press okay, whatever. For me, it was like a whole process. Like someone has to, would have to say, oh, remember, like checking is on the left and savings is on the right or whatever. And then remember at this store, you have to press okay twice before entering your PIN and all of that.
So I was terrified of dogs as a kid, and never really touched a dog because I was so afraid of them. So why would I touch those hairy monsters? And a few years ago when I went to get a guide dog, I had to touch my dog, obviously, and was willing to sort of face my fears and figure this out. And I, for the first time, realized that dogs' legs and arms bend. I guess they don't have arms. They have four legs. Oops. But like, I didn't know dogs had elbows or like wrist joints. Well, I don't know if they're called wrist joints. I don't know if dogs they have are. Wrists. Are they? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, but the front legs are still like as far as the skeleton goes, you kind of still have the same, you know, humerus and arm bones in the front and leg bones in the back.
Are they called arms?
I'm no, not sure if they're technically called arms.
They are called four-legged.
Right. Yeah.
So like front legs, back legs.
But I think it's like, yeah, front legs, bat legs. Yeah, they're still legs, but they kind of have the same bone structure in a different, you know, obviously the bones aren't the same length or the same shape entirely, but yeah.
So yeah, that was just one thing that I feel like most people know. But for me, my concept of animals is really just stuffed animals, because those are the only kinds of animals that I would really get close enough to check out, because I was pretty afraid of most animals. Oh, let's be real. I'm still afraid of most animals. I'm okay with dogs now. But Brody, what sorts of things did you have a hard time giving up when you lost your vision?
I know you can deal with accessible video games and stuff, but before I had my, you know, sight loss journey and stuff like that, which has been awesome actually, because I haven't really done, like, in the last 8 years, probably the first year and a half was kind of some self-loathing, whatever it was, but like before I was a big video game guy. And so now, you know, I know there's accessible stuff and features with PlayStation, Xbox and stuff like that, but just different types of games, you know, and not having the full aspect of that, or, you know, even, you know, watching a hockey game and stuff, or just paying attention to movies and whatnot. But now, you know, now being involved in blind sports and going that way, it's now like, you know, I was never an athlete before my vision journey. So I was more of a, couch and potato chip guy, and let's play some video games and watch Netflix or something like that. But now, playing blind hockey, blind tennis, and dragon boating, it's been just remarkable. I haven't done, like I was just saying to my girlfriend, that it's been great, being involved with all these different various organizations and having, the opportunity to still do the things that I enjoyed beforehand and stuff. So it's just like that with different things. Like I used to draw and stuff too, and I know I can mm-hmm. still do that. So I've been doing some painting and stuff, and kind of painting my white and red and blue and black and green kind of fuzzy crazy pixelated blobs, kind of painting a picture for people, right? But mm-hmm. Stuff like that, I used to sketch and stuff and just do that kind of stuff. So taking that kind of stuff and not having the chance to fully do it as I did before, but it's with my eye condition, because I was sighted before. So when I do dream, I guess I do see vivid and clear. So I do have not perfect sight. It's a dream world, so it's not all fuzzy and stuff still. But all the blind spots gone, so I can still go into that dream world. And I do some meditations and stuff too, so I can get some more vivid contact with that and stuff. So that's pretty cool that way. So just having the clarity and stuff of maybe not enjoying things and being visually stimulated and stuff. So that would probably be a big thing too. And, video games was my hobby. I didn't really have any sports, but now I do. Right. So, just stuff like that.
So, kind of like Roberti said, I used to sketch and draw a lot. And that's just something I've never figured out how to pick up again. And that was a big one for me. Cause as soon as I could still see lines on a piece of paper, but when my eyesight was getting continuously worse in that 6 month period, when I couldn't see the lines on the paper anymore, I'm like, oh my God, this is real. Like, I can't see a pencil mark on a piece of paper anymore and stuff like that. Right. So, but then I ended up finding pottery. So I found another alternative for art. So it kind of worked out. But something else I really miss, and it's kind of a different one, but in a car when we were driving down a road, I couldn't see out the window clearly. It was just a blur of green and blue and whatever other colors. But I miss being able to look out the window and just seeing random stuff. That was something that I just really remember missing so much, is not being able to see out the window anymore. Mm-hmm. Or just seeing nature and I can walk up to it and feel a tree, but it's not the same as standing a few feet away and looking at it. Or even flower, even people. I miss seeing people. Mm-hmm. I have images in my head of what people look like, and I know, I remember what people looked like from when I could see them, but that was 10 years ago, so I'm assuming most people don't look the same 10 years later. So I have these just random still images of my family and stuff, and I know that's not how they look anymore. So there's certain things like that. It's just nature and people, and just even just seeing the walls of my house and seeing what color they are, not having to ask someone. This little details, everyday details like that, is what I think I miss the most.
For me, losing the ability to read was probably the biggest. I loved books. I would go to the library or a bookstore all the time when I was a teenager, and I'd just sit on the floor and read the backs of books and smell the books, and just loved books so much.
That's so funny, because I'm the opposite. I was the opposite when I could see. I hated it because my eyes got so strained.
Well, it got harder and harder and harder for me to read until I just couldn't anymore. And I still love reading, but now it's audiobooks, and holy, it's so much easier.
Honestly.
Now I can read while I vacuum,
Well, it's ironic because I used to hate reading. It would be such a fight for me to have to read something. Because I would refuse until someone made me sit down and do it. As where now I read all the time, and I'm going into the publishing industry. So.
Yes.
That's ironic. You hating reading is such a weird concept.
I know. It's so ironic.
So, Nika, I'm just curious. Does it bother you that you can't play video games or draw?
I think it does in a way, but usually it's not the physical kind of things that frustrate me. It's because, you know, this is kind of my normal. It's what I've known. What I'm more susceptible to is the people, other people telling me I can't do the physical things I want to do. Mm-hmm. So generally, like, a barrier that I face more is other people rather than the physical task. Because, for example, I would really love to start painting. And then, you know, like, I would always be told, oh, you can't paint. We're not going to buy you paints. It would be a waste of money. You can't see enough to paint. So it's not the not being able to paint that frustrates me. It's the person telling me I can't paint.
I totally understand. And I think I have a similar view. And I wonder if that's partly growing up with a visual impairment and one of those differences, because it's people's perceptions of blindness that bother me. Not like kind of what I said, like, I don't care that I can't see the stars. But I do care when somebody judges me because of my blindness, or thinks that I'm less than, or treats me like I'm less than, or thinks I'm incapable.
Usually I forget. Like, I honestly most of the time forget I'm kind of legally blind, or don't really think about it until someone brings it up.
Yeah.
And I'm the way where if someone tells me I can't do something because of my visual impairment, it makes me mad, and then I want to prove them wrong.
Oh yeah, me too.
I kind of fight back with that one. Or I just ignore them and do it anyways, kind of thing. So
we just have so much to say about this topic that we've decided to split it into two episodes. So please join us again next week, where you can hear the second half of our conversation. And remember, you can send us an email at limitless@blindbeginnings.ca with topic ideas or questions for our Ask Abby feature, where Blind Beginnings youth answer your questions about blindness and visual impairment. Thank you to those of you who've already submitted your questions. We just need a few more, and then we'll run another one of those episodes. You've been listening to Limitless, the Blind Beginnings podcast. I'm your host, Sean Marcellet. Please join us next week. This podcast episode is being brought to you by Tega Building Products, one of our corporate sponsors of the Blind Beginnings Harvesting Hope Gala. Find them online at www.tegabuilding.com. That's Tega, T-A-I-G-A, building.com. Tickets to the Blind Beginnings Harvesting Hope online gala are now on sale. The gala will take place on October 17th, 2020 at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Tickets are $30. If you're interested in purchasing a ticket and helping support Blind Beginnings and the work we do, visit our website for more information at www.blindbeginnings.ca.